I'm Gab, he's Jules. Blue skies over West London because he's back from down under. That's right, Jules, welcome back. No more replacements. You get Gabs, you get Jules. Yeah, of course. How about that?
That's good.
And what a time to come back, because you were down at the Women's World Cup. We've had our two semifinals.
Yes.
Big ups to Spain and England, who will be contesting the final on Sunday. We're going to get to that in a minute. Lots of transfer stuff as well.
Yeah.
Neymar, Caicedo, Lavia, Paris Saint-Germain, Mbappe's future. We don't know. The Mancini Madness, all of that coming up. But let's start with the European Super Cup last night, because Sevilla showed once again they know how to play a final. And yes, it's a final. It's just one game. One-off games. They're really tough nut to crack. They made life very, very hard for City.
Yeah, they did. They set up well again. I mean, nothing very innovative from Mendilibar. It was very classic, let's put it that way. But they're hard to play against because they are so well-drilled, and they scored a really good goal that was maybe a little bit too easy in every way, the way they moved the ball, to the way the cross was allowed, to the way the header was allowed. Like Vardiol and Ake and Akanji, to be fair, at fault on that. And then City came back, and then it was the penalties. But yeah, I thought Sevilla should really good things. And for City, it's still a little bit, I don't know. I thought they would be slow.
There's some things to sort out. Cole Palmer, of course, starting, because obviously Kevin De Bruyne is injured. We'll talk about the impact of that. Bernardo Silva, ill.
Yeah.
Although he's ill, but then he signs it. Maybe it was the prospect of signing that contract extension,
maybe,
which made him sick and giddy with excitement. This meant that Foden had to play centrally. I think there's still things to iron out there. Listen, I was arguing before De Bruyne got injured that they're short.
Yeah.
Because in the front four, you have six, let's say, high-quality players who can fill that in, who can play in that in those front four roles, right? And the guys off the bench are, effectively, Foden and Julian Alvarez.
Yeah.
Alvarez was on the bench last night as a half, which is why Palmer started. You're cutting it way too fine over the course of a long season.
Yeah.
Looks like they got the message. They've been linked with not one, but two players quite strongly.
Yeah.
One, Lucas Paqueta. The other one, Dani Olmo.
And Jeremy Doku as well.
That's right.
Who's coming, I think, for sure.
But you reckon they're going to get two of those three? I think they should get two of those three.
Yeah, I think that's the idea. They could not, especially with Mahrez leaving as well. You can't have the De Bruyne injury, which is bad until December, out until December. Mahrez leaving and Cole Palmer, I know he scored two goals now in the Community Shield and the Super Cup, but he's maybe not ready for a full season as a starter, for example.
Well, he's 21, and I think he's at the stage where he has hit a ceiling. And it was interesting to hear them say, look, he's not going to go on loan. He's either going to stay or we're going to sell him. So the idea is you either stay so that you can be a backup, or we're going to get some money back for you so we can fund these two.
Who would you pick between? So I think Doku is pretty much done, but between Paqueta and Dani Olmo, I mean, two different profiles.
I think I would go 100% for Paqueta. Again, always dependent on price. But if price is not a consideration, and obviously because it's fashionable to quote nine figures for everything.
Yeah.
100 million for Dani Olmo, 100 million for Lucas Paqueta, right? Upshot is, I think Lucas Paqueta can do, if your concern is attacking midfield creativity, De Bruyne, Bernardo Silva, Foden can play that position, they play it differently. I would argue that 100%. The packet is the most natural 100%. Person there. I think he's more natural replacement for Gundogan than Kovacic is.
Kovacic,
I certainly have injury concerns with him
and
as well.
Paqueta is left-footed. And I think, you know, you need a playmaker like him as well as left-footed, because that means he can play with De Bruyne when De Bruyne comes back too.
The main concern with Olmo is Olmo, 5 years at Leipzig now, I don't think he's done it with any continuity. We've only seen glimpses.
Yeah, so and I don't think against Bayern in the German Super Cup.
He also hasn't played very much. He's had injuries. He's in,
there's
out.
There's no consistency there.
I don't think Pep needs a project right now. Paqueta, the packet also has been in the Premier League. He knows the Premier League.
Yeah.
This may be a situation where you have to overpay, but that's okay, because maybe you can get the Saudis to overpay for Emerick Laporte.
Yeah.
Your boy gone.
Very true. I mean, I know the Saudis are great offers. I still really question some of the players who decide to go there. And it's not a criticism. Maybe we would do the same thing. I'm saying, I think a lot of them who've gone in that kind of age bracket, maybe had a future in Europe, they chose Saudi Arabia. Good for them. Laporte is one of them.
Yeah. And when the next Gavin Jules show comes to you on the Saudi Sports Channel, you'll know why. Okay, Jules, I don't want to ignore Sevilla here because I think, you know, for people who don't, they started out the season with that defeat against Valencia, of all people.
Yeah.
They're in the situation now with Bono, who they want to, they hope to move on. They want to move on, obviously they also want to showcase him.
Yeah.
I guess Dimitrovic is gonna be the number one.
Yeah.
It feels like this is a team that's kind of always, they shouldn't be in this situation, right? They should be the fourth force in La Liga alongside, you know, Real Sociedad right now. But they're not. No. Money's always tight. It's always difficult. I guess it speaks to the broader imbalance of power. But then you have a game like this. And Lucas Ocampos, I thought, was phenomenal last night.
It's the same, man. Him, Lamela. Every time I see them, I think, like, oh, come on. There's a point. But then they're such a pain to play against and things like that. And I think Sevilla have kind of overachieved for a long time due to, I think, good coaches that they've had. Monchi's working his magic on the transfer market, things like that, which was not the case so much in the last couple of years.
It wasn't always magical, really, right?
Yeah, certainly not Roma, but certainly even not when he came back before then, now going to Aston Villa. But you're right, the fact that they are still sometimes, I don't know, it doesn't feel like they're that kind of power of Spanish football, which is strange, because they should be right now. With all the money they've made through the years, when things were good with Monchi's magic, it's still weird that it's, you know, you still have Rakitic in midfield. I mean, come on, you've got Gutierrez at the back.
The guy who starts alongside Rakitic normally is Fernando, who is a year older than Rakitic.
Yeah.
You're right. Gutierrez, who's a midfielder playing at center back and playing well at center back.
Playing really well.
The other guy, Bade, seems to be a walking card, but that's no, but you know, they have two World Cup winning fullbacks, and one of them's on the bench because the guy keeping him out of the side,
he's 45 years old. Yeah, I know, it's really good, but good for them. I just don't know how well they're going to do this season. That's all. I think there's limits, and then Nziri might not even stay, to be fair. So,
how much do we read into the fact that on this day, basically by playing narrow, congesting the middle, right? So, Kovacic, Foden, they're running into brick walls. I thought the City got almost nothing for most of the game down their right-hand side because that was a side that Cole Palmer was on.
And that's not what he does, yeah.
He's not going to beat you one-on-one. He's not going to – and he had Walker behind him, which, you know, again, he's got other strengths.
Yeah.
They had some more success on the left. We saw Gvardiol there playing
really
at left back.
Really interesting, yeah.
Which – he's done before. He's also played right back. He's also played center back. We all assumed he was coming to play center back, but, you know, Pep pulling that one out of the hat. I thought they dealt well with Guardiola and Grealish on that side. Eventually, though, obviously,
Goal comes from there, yeah.
The goal does come from there, from the little Rodri chip, and they had that little diagonal chip. They had some success with that. This should be a moderate concern as well. I mean, leaving aside the absence of the creator in the middle.
Yeah, I thought they were very predictable, I have to say. And I know the goal is a good goal, but I thought it was very predictable. I think it was slow at times. Pep changed a little bit in the second half where Akanji did the Stones roll more and they had the box. But even that, I mean, yeah, they had a lot of the ball, but didn't really do much. I think Haaland had 6 passes in the whole game, 15 touches, 1-5 and 1 shot, and that was it.
Yeah, Haaland's
service was not there. Foden, as you said, just, he seemed lost to me. And I know he's not lost because it's a position he's played there before.
But he hasn't played there in a long time.
No, yeah, true. And with that density of players there, because clearly, as you said, Gab, that was the plan for Sevilla to defend against them. He just never found his rhythm, never found anything. And I think that's a problem. And really, De Bruyne's absence until December, I think it's a huge blow for them because the creativity that you're losing, unless until someone like Paqueta arrives or whoever they
Even if Bernardo Silva had been fit in this game, you know, maybe they would have scored early, then they win 3-0. We don't have this conversation, right?
Because
the concerns are there.
You know where you ended up in that first half, especially? There's a couple of times where Rodri is on the ball and Rodri is looking at Haaland as like with a through ball. And like, this is not Rodri. Rodri's an amazing player, but this is not his strength. And even Haaland was frustrated that the balls that usually come from De Bruyne was not there when they could have been there. And I think that's something that Pep will have to work on.
So we talked about it at the back, Laporte leaving. Do you think we're going to see much of the 3-2-4? Do you think, I mean, we've seen him play a back four in these early games.
Yeah.
Do we have any sense of 3-4?
So no, depending on when Stones comes back and when he's fully fit. What is happening with Ruben Dias? What is he on the bench in the league? Is he on the bench again? Is he just maybe not fit? Or
so what I was told, but I don't know, is some suggestion that, because obviously preseason was quite intense,
yeah.
just physically to build up the fitness, especially for the bigger, heavier players like Ruben Dias or Stones.
So he's coming back for Newcastle at the weekend.
Sorry?
He would be back for...
I think, sure, Pep wants to win the Super Cup and everything, but if there was a legit fitness issue, I don't think he would have brought him to Athens in that heat, you know, for... to keep him involved.
But I think Vardy gives you another dimension. He looks so composed on the ball for a left footer, more than Ake, for example, I think, who's done a lot of improvement in his game with the ball. But Vardy, a left back, is, although for me he made a mistake on the goal, is good. He looked good.
All right, let's talk about, because can we kind of, like, we'll talk about him again before he disappears into the sunset or sunrise of the Saudi Pro League. But what went wrong? Because I kind of feel this is a guy who arguably hit one season where, I mean, he was arguably the best or close to the best defender in the Premier League. He's comfortable on the ball. He's a phenomenal athlete.
Yeah.
What went wrong?
I don't know. It's a good question. I don't think he knows himself. Certainly the last time I kind of touched upon the situation, he didn't know why suddenly, because he was quite sudden, just lost his place completely in the team. There was, I don't know, problem with Pep maybe? I really don't understand what happened, because he was good on set, like he was a threat on set pieces offensively for City. He was good, he made a couple of mistakes, and maybe those mistakes were too many for Pep, who's very unforgiving usually with his defenders, and they have so many, because Akanji, Ake.
Yeah, but sorry, you mentioned Akanji and Ake. Like, with all due respect, they are Akanji and Ake. Akanji, when he came in, nobody thought he was going to be this good.
No, definitely. Ake, same.
Ake was the guy who kept getting injured, blah, blah, blah. His first season, Ake hardly played, even though I think he was fit for most of it.
Yeah.
I mean, the only guy who was there, the only defenders who came with a huge price tag were Ruben Dias and John Stones, right? When you look at that unit, and I guess Walker,
Laporte was very expensive.
So Laporte, Ruben Dias, Laporte, right, left, boom,
perfect.
You know,
I don't know, something happened for sure, and we will know. But
do you think it's a Cancelo? Are there parallels with the Cancelo situation?
Maybe. Maybe his attitude changed once he was dropped and lost his place in the team, and Pep didn't like it. But it's a really strange one. Really,
and are you surprised that he chooses to go to Saudi rather than saying, look, I've got a couple years left, let me go on loan somewhere in Europe, or I'll take a pay cut or whatever.
Surely in Spain he would have had clubs, in Italy.
Anywhere, yeah.
You know, surely. A player of his calibre, I think, and his talent. So really surprised by that move. From his point of view, the City takes that kind of money for him, I've got no problems. And I think the Saudis have been a blessing for a lot of clubs in terms of who they went to buy and all of that. But from him to agree, I was a bit surprised.
It's only a kick. A jump. A block. It's only a serve. It's only a tackle. A run. It's only for the fans. After all, it's only pressure. You got this. Adidas.
All right, enough City and Sevilla. How about Women's World Cup?
Yes.
Because we have our finalists.
We do.
It's going to be on Sunday. It's going to be England. Well, I say Sunday, but depending what part of the world, it might actually be a different day.
True.
It's going to be England against Spain.
Yeah.
And whoever wins this is going to join a select group of nations that have won the World Cup, both the men's and the women's World Cup.
Yeah.
Do you know who the only country to achieve it so far is?
It is Germany.
Germany won the Men's World Cup 4 times. I think the Women's World Cup twice, if I'm not mistaken.
Once?
Once, is it? All right. England, of course, some people say, should the 66 win count? But let's count it. Let's count it. Let's not be uncharitable. And, of course, Spain, their success coming much more recently.
Yeah.
Normally you ask, are these the two best teams in the tournament? Are these the two teams who play the best football in the tournament? I'm going to write out and say it. I would say, because I actually like players who are technical and pass and show it regularly.
Yeah.
I'm going to say Spain, yes.
Yeah.
England, to me, more, they haven't played great football, but they've made experience and grit and athleticism count. And also the fact that while they haven't played great football necessarily, they are still stacked with talent, with that combination of talent, experience, great football. I mean, we look at just the pool of forwards that they have, even with Beth Mead there.
Yeah.
That makes such a difference.
Yeah, I think you summed it up well. I think Spain have been, for me, the best team because they've played the best football. Okay, they got battered by Japan in the group stage, but it's a meaningless score when you see it in the bigger picture now. They, by far, much better than anybody else as a squad technically. They were ahead of everybody. And I think they completely deserve to be there. England are this ruthless team, like France in 2018, for example, who don't play great, but do exactly what they need to win. You make a mistake, they punish you. They've got that sort of really efficient side of them, not just by scoring goals, but they're just efficient in everything. They know exactly what to do. They have confidence. They have a coach who they've won before, which helps, of course, the Euros. But they have that. So no, they're not great to watch. They don't play great, or they just do what they need to win. And I think this is a huge quality to have. And for that, they deserve to be there. They could have lost to Nigeria, maybe deserve to lose to Nigeria in the last 16. But in the end, they're there because of that ruthlessness that they have, for example, that the England men's side don't have at all, where the women's side really have it. And it's as much as that final is an opposition of style, it also shows that you can win two different ways. And I don't know who's going to win. I think Spain, I would go with Spain. I predicted them to win in my bracket. That was almost perfect, by the way. The only one I didn't have was France. I had France winning against Australia. But that two different styles can still get you to a final of a World Cup, which I think is great.
Now, we talk about the two different styles, though. I don't think, though, that it's not quite necessarily that extreme in the sense that it's not like England. I don't think it's England necessarily wanting to go and park the bus style football.
Yeah.
It's more a case of England having been able to play well in this tournament.
Yeah.
And they get through though because they generally have much better players in terms of total package than many of the teams that they faced. And you mentioned the ruthlessness. I might call it maybe the big game experience again.
I
think back to the Colombia game, right? Where, okay, mistakes made a big difference in the
game.
Right?
Man. If they don't score just before they break England to make it 1-1, I'm not sure the rest of the game is the same.
But equally, they stay in the game. They don't necessarily feel as if they're flipping out. And I mean, I'm wondering, is it because maybe the England players are more used to playing on big stages, in front
maybe.
Of big crowds.
Yeah, maybe.
You know, we often forget the fact that, and this has been one of the stories of this World Cup, and we'll get into it in the Gavin Jones podcast, the resources available to many women outside of the wealthy nations. You know, people talk about like, oh, look, the Winter Olympics. It's the rich man's or the rich person's Olympics, right? Yeah, women's football is football for rich people. That's what it has been most of its history.
Time. Yeah, yeah.
So to see Colombia, I'm not saying Colombia is a poor country.
No, but now it's changing.
Football
league. Yeah.
But for those women, in terms of experience, in terms of resources, you know, it is uphill. England had the mental strength to make that count. And I think that is one of the big differences about why they're this far in the final. I think it's pretty much level with Spain. Spain will wonder, you know, England will wonder maybe about some of their injured players who aren't there. Spain will wonder about some of the players who aren't there because of the issues with Vilda, the national team coach. Jose, there's some great stories behind this. That people who follow women's football all year long will be very familiar with some people who don't follow this at all. might not be familiar with, and they may not care, but they're good stories. So
yeah.
Some of these stories, I think, and one of the biggest ones is obviously the issue with Spain. We touched upon it. The coach, Vilda, massive falling out. He's been there a long time, also because I think his dad is at the Spanish Federation. Massive falling out with the players after the Euros. As many as 15 players wrote to the Federation saying that, you know, they weren't available for selection if he was going to continue.
Yeah, like what the French did, obviously, similar.
Luis Rubiales took a very hard line and said,
against the players, when the French went against the coach.
Which is an interesting take.
Yeah.
I understand Rubiales' position. You cannot, this is not a union, right?
No.
Like, you don't get to decide who the coach is. Now, I, as a federation, have to answer, because if I call Vilda and then all the best players don't play and we suck, then Vilda's going to get the bullet and I bring somebody else in, right? Yeah. And maybe I might get the bullet for siding with Vilda.
Yeah.
But you don't get to decide, and I don't have the issue there. But the reality is, they go to this World Cup with, I think, maybe at least three players from Barcelona.
Yeah, one of them, starters, yeah.
Mapi León, an important player. All those guys out of the mix.
Yeah.
And with arguably their best player, or their most famous player, Alexia, very much feeling marginal in this team.
Yeah,
right?
I think. And coming back from a really bad injury, too.
But she was one of those who doesn't necessarily see eye to eye with Vilda either.
Definitely.
And they get this far and they play good football.
Yeah.
What's the secret? Because obviously Barcelona and Atletico Madrid powerhouses, but women's football probably not really priority for Spain until maybe a decade ago.
Yeah, you know, but to be fair, the program they put together that has brought a lot of young players through, and we see Parreiros, we see others who are quite young and doing so well, technically so advanced. Again, I think it needs to be stressed out. But despite that, and there must be, there are issues in that dressing room. There must be tension still between some who are here but were against Vilda before but are still here, the ones who were always kind of with him who are still here as well, but you know who's who and what camp you are in, and you know she's in and she's in, etc. So I don't know how he deals with it. It seems to be very can't be easy, I think, to deal with. But I guess as long as you win, it's fine. And for me, the most impressive was post-Japan defeat, because the way, and okay, you can look at it and it's a freak of a result and a freak of a game, because in that first half, Japan went like touched the ball three times in the Spain box. They scored three goals. I think they had 27 seconds they spent in the Spain last third, and they scored three goals. You can do that game again and it would never happen the same way. But the way they responded and bounced back was very impressive, and I think he deserves some credit. He's probably not perfect, but for that, he deserves some credit, and he's in the World Cup final.
When you talk about teams that, you know, play based on technical ability, play what, you know, the big stereotype is, oh, pretty football, you're always kind of, because you're taking the extra pass or whatever, there's always a sense that other people can play against you by sitting deep, allowing you to play in front of them, and then playing on the counter. Now, I know that's kind of a bit reductive to describe Sweden that way when they played against Spain. Probably also accurate about the way Sweden maybe played against the United States. So when they played in their when they faced each other in their semifinal, I thought they finally deserved, took the lead, but then came the equalizer. Yeah. And I feel like in this Women's World Cup, there's always, somebody can always make a mistake, somebody can always quickly get back into it. How important was it that they then went on to, obviously it was very important they closed it out, but could we see a similar script against England?
Maybe.
Are England a better, more talented Sweden? Basically,
yeah, maybe. Although the Swede had a lot of momentum going, and I think had a lot of crises, and a lot of people, even with ESPN, you know, who were with me at the World Cup, thought this was Sweden's time and that they would beat in Spain and everything. This is the second time as well against the Dutch. Spain were in the lead and conceded that really late goal, then went to extra time, could not score the winner before, and had to go to extra time where they won it after a big scare and a big chance for the Dutch too. So there's still some issues defensively, especially, I think, because of the way they play. And Paredes has been amazing, I think, in this World Cup. But they still can control everything. So that's something for England. And I think Alessia Russo will have a huge role to play in the final. England to exploit. But I just think they have so much with the ball, Spain. They create so much, and the lack of clinical Spain haven't been clinical enough in all the things that they've created, all the chances that they've had. Unlike England, which could be a key factor in that final, because you might have just one chance or two, and if you don't score it, you might regret it. Spain won't have five or six chances like they've had maybe in other games and just took one. I think that could be also the limit maybe against England, such a strong England team, as you said.
On England, there's a big call to make. Obviously, Lauren James will be available again after her suspension, which when I was doing the show with Nadim, who was obviously backing Nigeria. And when we saw the Lauren James thing, you know, everything was ready to say it's a David Beckham moment. You know, for those who didn't see this, she goes and she deliberately kind of steps on the opponent's back. You're not going to get away with that in the age of VAR. She's apologized. She got her automatic one match ban, then another ban. Ella Toon played in her place. Mm-hmm. I don't think she was necessarily exceptional in the match. I saw Lauren James gives you more.
Yeah, yeah.
Do you think there's going to be a change?
I don't think there should be. I think Ella Toon has to start the final, bring on Lauren James as a super sub if needs be. Let's not forget Ella Toon scored in the World Cup semi-final, in the Euros final, of course, against Germany, a very important goal. And I think I told you that when I did the show, when I just came on a little bit for the show with Nadim, I think you should punish Lauren James anyway. And for me, starting her in a World Cup final where her teammates, and I know this is a team and you're all together, but they got there without her because she was not good in the last 16 against Nigeria and got that red card that could have got her team out. Then the quarterfinal, semifinal, she was in there in arguably the two toughest games that England have had to play in Colombia and then Australia. Why change it? Don't bring her back into the team. Put her on the bench. If you need her, then yeah, bring her up. Bring her on for the last 20, 25 if you're a goal down or if it's nil-nil or whatever. But I think Ella Toon deserves to start the final.
To go back to that Australia game, which, you know, we talked about how England have not played well in this tournament and yet they've managed to advance. Did you feel that was actually a better performance than what we've seen before?
No, I didn't think so. But they were better than...
It was better than the Nigeria game.
Yeah, but they were
better than the Colombia game.
Yeah, but I think they were still so much better in a way than Australia. Australia have the great mentality and the togetherness that you want, and they're physical and they're intense, okay. But if you score first to start with, that's a big help. And then England were always... It looked like they were always stronger in that game anyway. And maybe the occasion, that semi-final for Australia, they've never reached that... Yeah, that kind of game before, I think they got really nervy.
I mean, so I know you're not going to put it down to one person. Sam Kerr, obviously, going into the tournament carrying an injury.
Yeah.
Maybe not fully fit, or definitely not fully fit in the final, but scores one tremendous goal.
The other one, big chance on the corner that she misses.
Big chance where the ball comes down to her. Mm. It was funny because, I mean, from a technical aspect, right? I would have thought the easiest thing to do, let that ball drop more before you strike it.
Yeah, even
because there was nobody close to her.
Yeah, exactly.
Did she just feel that maybe there was somebody on her and so she's like, I got to get my shot off quickly?
Yeah, she rushed it. And maybe she rushed it because she hasn't played enough in the last month or so.
Her rhythm is off.
Yeah, exactly. And I think it could just be down to this. And which is a shame because she's the most lethal striker in the world. Her and Pop, I guess. And for her to miss that chance where you would have put your house on her scoring from that close range... It's really unlike her and strange, but I certainly watching the game, I put that on the fact that she lacks much in that friendly before her little cameo entrances there and there.
If that goes in, the momentum shifts.
Yeah,
and we have, who knows what happens?
Yeah, you don't know.
But obviously, it would have been an absolute barnstorming.
It would have been incredible.
In that game.
Another day is here, and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24-7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America NA, member FDIC.
All right, enough of that. How about some quick hits instead?
Let's go, Gab. I've missed this.
All right, Jules. Neymar to Al Hilal is done. Yeah. Paris Saint-Germain hailed him as a club legend in their farewell message. Are you going to go that far? Is he a club legend?
Nah, come on. Come on. I can see what they've done here. Okay. There's some people in Paris who have been going too far the other way, calling him a flop. I wouldn't go that far because the numbers, as you've written them there, Gabby, in 6 seasons, 82 goals in the league, 118 in all, in almost a goal per game, pretty much. Not just that, but let's say 0.8 or something. But the guy has missed half of the games in the 6 seasons.
The operative number here is he has played in 112 games in 6 years.
Yeah.
That is objectively difficult to do.
47%. The rest, he was injured and he had bad injuries. That it's not all on him, of course. And he got kicked and he got this and he got that. But overall, he took PSG to a Champions League final, albeit in a strange COVID season, but still could not just get it over the line. He's been great at times. Don't get me wrong. Amazing at times. But at times where he was either not there or there, but not really there either.
But yeah, club legend, we reserve that for other people.
Yeah. For George Weah, you know, like, let's.
Zlatan?
Yes, Zlatan, Thiago Silva, right? I mean, whoever, but not.
Can we give a big round of applause for the fee that they got back?
90 million euros, as we reported. Amazing. Plus bonuses, he could even get to 100 million.
That's pretty remarkable. Given his wages and given his age. Remarkable.
So, just between you and I and all our listeners around the world, PSG would have been happy with 30 million, 3-0.
Of course.
That was the value they had in mind for any European club. Then the Saudis arrive and it's time three. I mean, come on. And like I said to you before, the Saudi money has been a blessing for a lot of big, big clubs in Europe.
This gets you out of a lot of germs.
Yeah. It's getting ugly, Gabby, between the Italian FA and Napoli over Luciano Spalletti. You even wrote a column about this.
I did. I mean, look, the whole situation's weird and really, frankly, embarrassing. So it starts with Roberto Mancini announcing his shock resignation. Yeah. It's not 100% clear. Some things have filtered out about why he resigned. He said he didn't. Apparently, he doesn't feel the trust of the FA anymore.
Did he appoint like Gigi Buffon as some sort of manager without Mancho's agreement?
No, he has Gianluca Vialli's old job, so he's the head of delegation. Which I don't think it was that so much because he knew he was getting somebody like that in. It was more to do, I think, a little bit with staffing. On paper, he was responsible for all the national teams,
the youth teams, and everything.
But in practice. Mancini's an odd guy.
Mancini's going to do what
Mancini's going to do.
Yeah.
So then they say, oh, great. What talented Italian managers are out there that we can hire who aren't employed? So there's Antonio Conte. It's like, Antonio, wait a minute.
We've been here before.
So they want Luciano Spalletti, right? Problem with Spalletti, as we told you many times, is he had another year left because Napoli activated his contract. He said he didn't want to coach. He says, well, fine. So to stop us finding you in breach of contract, you can go on sabbatical. But if you interrupt that sabbatical, you got to pay us 3.2 million euros.
All right.
Which the Italian FA either thought that it wasn't important, they thought it didn't apply to them because they're not a rival club.
They wanted a discount or something.
No, they don't want to pay it.
Nothing at all. Not even like
just to go to court. If they appoint Spalletti, then they hope to resolve the situation by the weekend. I don't think anybody comes out good because Aurelio De Laurentiis came out and gave this long statement where he got all preachy. So it's like, you need to know the rules. Like 3 million, it's not 3 million. 3 million means nothing to Napoli, means even less to me. I'm like, great, Aurelio, you're so rich. However, he's got the contract, I think, that says that he's right.
Yeah.
Other thing from Spalletti, dude. If you want to manage so much, why don't you pay yourself?
Exactly.
Right? You we're talking 3 million euros over 3 years. The deal that you're signing is going to be, it's going to pay you about 6 million gross.
Yeah.
I'm sure you can take it as a business expense. So, it's an odd one and it's embarrassing. I really hope it doesn't go to court. Romeo Lavia is reportedly set to have a medical at Chelsea after they agreed a £58 million deal with Southampton. And Michael Olise, one of my favorite players, looks to be on his way as well after the club activated his £35 million release.
That's right.
Palace, of course. Jules, how much does this move the needle for Pochettino?
Let's start with Lavia and midfielders because he need more midfielders, even with Caicedo there would be Enzo, there would be Gallagher. I think you could do with another one. Would you spend 60 million on the other one who might not even start? That's another debate. But I think you need more depth in your squads. Olise is an amazing talent, is wonderful. I think at 35, it's a bargain. So you go for him. So in a way, I understand both deals, even if you overpay for Lavia, which clearly is the case. I understand both deals. And I do think that this moves the needle in the sense that this is more depth, more options for Pochettino on top of what we've seen already, the positives against Liverpool in that system.
Are they the third force now? After, I'm assuming you have City and Arsenal ahead of them.
Yeah, I mean, I think the Caicedo deal is a game changer. Even before Lavia and Olise.
But now just, that you've got these other guys, I know European football
more,
and whatever.
Even more. All for right. me, yeah. They have to finish top four now. It's,
no. But are they the third?
Yeah.
City and Arsenal. So
yeah,
they're number three.
Definitely.
Okay.
No doubt. And Gab, staying with Chelsea, they are spending massively, as we just mentioned. And let's not forget, they also have spent close to 45 million on managers who are no longer there at the club. And they don't have any European incomes because, as we've been saying, there's no European competition. How can they afford all of this? Financial fair play.
So, yeah. So there's obviously two things. There's UEFA's rules, which cover both financial fair play and financial stability rules. Now, those technically don't concern them this season because they're not playing in Europe.
Exactly.
The Premier League financial stability rules are an issue, especially because the revenue presumably will go down a lot. Because there's no European football, that could be anywhere from, they usually probably budgeted about 60 million from that. One thing to remember is is amortization. So when you buy a player for 100 million, you put him on a 5-year deal, he's costing you 20 million
each year.
When you sell a player, you can book that as a profit straight away, depending on his residual amortization, how much he has left back. So looking at this, if they could sell Chalobah, Gallagher, Callum Hudson-Odoi, whatever they bank goes directly to offset.
Yeah.
I think some of those guys are going to be shifted, or they're going to try to shift some of them. Obviously, they spent money on Di Sassi as well.
Yeah.
Ziyech, close to do medical with Fenerbahce, I think.
Yeah.
And of course, there's still the big, Lukaku elephant in the room.
What do you do with Lukaku?
Which, you got to find a solution. I still think, even with all that, it's really, really dicey. And I think there's a lot of teams that are going to put pressure on the Premier League. It's like, can you explain Chelsea's figures? Because let's not forget, 600 million that went out the window.
But now it's a billion. In a year, they've spent a billion, Gab. In 12 months, between last summer transfer window, the January transfer window, and this transfer window, it's £1 billion.
Yeah. And the concern is these amortization values, at what point are they going to come and bite you in the backside?
Yeah.
Because, it's great. You've spread it out over a long time, but Chelsea already have the highest amortization in the Premier League going into the season. Massive blow for Arsenal, Jules, as Jurrien Timber goes down injured. I guess Mikel Arteta needed less, like he needed a hole in the head.
Yeah, I mean, terrible news, of course, for Timber to start with, because the kid is arriving from Ajax. He's very excited. It's a team. He's starting the season. And then that really bad knee injury comes and just stops it all, which is terrible. He will obviously come back and he's still young enough, but it's a terrible blow and for the team, because Arteta really liked the versatility. He's a really good kid. He's got great mentality, can play really good technically. So he will be a loss, even if they've got cover, of course, and other defenders. But that's just not a way to start the season, really. Bayern are scrambling for a goalkeeper, having seemingly just realized, Gab, that Manuel Neuer won't be back for a while. And there's no Jan Sommer, obviously, that they let go to Inter. They linked to Stefan Ortega and David De Gea after missing out on Kepa too.
There's no Alexander Nübel either, who they let go to Stuttgart.
I mean, I can't blame him for that.
How could you possibly have known? Like, what? Kang, Sven Ulreich the rest of the season? the two guys they've been linked with, I don't like either one, frankly. Well, first of all, Stefan Ortega, unless he raises a fuss to leave, presumably they're familiar with him, obviously. The guy's German. But if he's happy to be Ederson's number two, I wonder if maybe that's why Pep also paid him in the Community Shield.
Yeah.
I think that's going to be a tough one. David De Gea, I'm not going to come to Bayern for a 1-year deal. I'm going to come to Bayern.
And in 6 months, I don't play anymore?
And Tuchel's, he's coming. Oh, we need an experienced guy in the Champions League who will also accept to go on the bench when Neuer's fit again.
Okay.
Yeah, good luck.
Yeah.
Really good luck with that. This is way back on Monday night, but Manchester United were hardly impressive in their 1-0 win over Wolves. Jules, your thoughts?
Yeah, really underwhelming the way they play with the ball. I mean, they were not the best team at all. Wolves were the best team by far. And to concede so many chances, shots on target, Onana with an incredible game in goal, could be worrying. It's not worrying because United are going to get better and better. But to start the season, it was really slow and really average. And they got lucky with the win, the Varane goal.
Lisandro Martinez had a bit of a stinker. I don't know if he's not fit.
And the thing is, you play Spurs this weekend, which is going to be a different story because they're going to attack and attack and attack against you. So a lot of things to work on for Ten Hag, for sure. And Gab, late in that game, VAR didn't intervene when Andre Onana collided or, you know, barged into Sasa Kalajic, and both the referee, Simon Hooper, and the VAR official of the night, Michael Salisbury, have been suspended for not deciding on putting the penalty, basically. What do you make of it?
I think it was a wrong decision. I think the benchmark now is what impact does it have? So if he gets the shot, if the player arrives late and you get the shot off and it goes out, that's fine. But in this case, the ball's still bouncing around the area. Yeah. So it had a material impact. I think it was the right decision to say, guys, take a break. You made a mistake.
Hey, it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin! Or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
Jules, you've been gone for so long. I feel like we need a Kylian Mbappe update.
Oh, my boy. I mean, every 6 months I'm here and there's always twists and turns and stuff and things. And now he's happy that his best mate Ousmane Dembele is there. They're looking forward to playing together against Toulouse at the weekend. He's happy to stay. Neymar's gone, which was a big reason why Kylian decided to stay and potentially extend his contract at Paris, with like some sort of release clause in it or having some sort of agreement with the club in terms of his bonuses so he can go on a free, but they will still get something if you want, despite him leaving. That's still yet to be decided, but he's happy to stay now after all that kind of crisis and arm wrestling competition between him and the club. It was just crazy, man.
So can I give you an alternate explanation?
Yeah.
I've spoken to a bunch of sports lawyers about this. This whole thing about the club trying to freeze him out, which, you know, is what clubs often do in preseason with the excuse, well, he's waiting for a move, blah, blah, blah. He's never going to fly. He was never. I spoke to somebody who said, oh, if they try to do that, especially, it's not just the French PFA, it's also French labor law. Like, the risk is he could become like a free agent in like October or November.
Well, you know, they with Rabiot, the French,
Rabiot, they had disciplinary reasons. It was a motivated.
But the law in France is that as long as you provide him with a similar first team experience, so qualified coaches, not on his own but other players, all that kind of stuff, you're allowed. A lot of clubs do it. That's what we call the loft in France, where you put all the unwanted players, the ones you're trying to sell, the one that you don't want.
Again, you know how I feel about lawyers.
Unfortunately, yeah,
I've had to speak to a lot of them. They said like they were never going to win that.
And probably not.
This way, at least they have him. I have him playing for him. They still have the hope that, who knows? He seems to be like an odd chap who likes to change his mind at the last minute.
Yeah, maybe.
If you're Real Madrid, should you sign another striker then?
Mm.
Or is this just a ploy between this and the Neymar money, that they want to make Real Madrid a little bit nervous, that they think Real Madrid are going to make another offer in the last days of the window?
No, I think they know that now Real Madrid are not going to come anymore. And if you're Real Madrid, I think you maybe stick with Vinicius, Rodrigo, and then have Joselu on the bench and then see what happens between now and January. I don't know. I think it's a fascinating one. I would have loved to see what Real Madrid would have done between now and September 1st for Kylian. Had he still been frozen out and PSG keeping it like really strict, no, you're not going to play, we want to sell you, who's coming in? I'd be really curious to see what Real Madrid would have done comes August 26, 27, 28. Had they maybe drawn a couple of La Liga games or lost even one? Now they won their first one, but do you see what I mean? I would have been really curious. It's not going
to
happen now.
Well, and also they have to spend money. They have to spend money on Kepa, on loan, and maybe another defender.
Maybe a centre back, yeah.
But if this gets to the summer, if you're Real Madrid, you've been screwed over once before. I mean, my temptation is you speak to Mama Mbappe and you say, all right, January 1st, pre-contract.
Yeah.
If you didn't sign it by then.
Yeah. You're right. Yeah,
you stick around at Paris Saint-Germain. I think they've got the release clause, all this nonsense. Like, you know, why pay compensation when we don't need to if you really want to come?
Yeah.
Otherwise, at that point, I would move on.
I think the most likely is that Kylian will waive away some of the bonuses that PSG will owe him. So it would be like, I don't know, 50, 70 million euros. He won't take that. And that would be like a transfer fee, if you want, from Real Madrid, who still will get Kylian on a free. But PSG will get something back, i.e. the bonus that they would not have given to Kylian.
Why would Kylian do that?
Because he promised the club that in order to play again, that he would not leave for nothing. So we see. Right. But he can't have said that this time round and then really like go for free with nothing back to the club.
Why? Because it's not been done before. I would have thought it's pretty extraordinary. It's an extraordinary situation.
I mean, it was unseen before, ever. Liverpool have their sights set on Stuttgart, Watari Endo, at 16 million euros, Gab, to bolster their midfield that needs being bolstering, to be honest. And there's also talk of Ryan Gravenberch. We've heard that before. What do you stand about that? And what do you make of the whole Caicedo's and even Lavia's fiasco? Let's put it that way. From a Liverpool point of view,
I think it's Liverpool putting a number on players. And I think they went higher on Caicedo, possibly because of Don Hutchinson's rant while he was seated there. To put in that bid when you don't have the information that Caicedo is going to turn you down,
it's embarrassing.
It's really bad. And this is why you have a specialist. What does the director of football does, the manager, the gaffer? No, this is why you have a specialist. And they have a specialist on board now, right? Supposedly, right?
I think Endo is his man very much.
That's great. He's a specialist in German players because that's where he comes from. Yeah. But this is really embarrassing. This is bad. And you should have known ahead of time that this is going to happen. The Lavia thing, I don't fault them if you don't think Lavia is a 50. I mean, personally, I like Endo at 16 more than
me too.
Lavia at 58 because Lavia is younger and comes with risks and whatever. So I don't have an issue with that. But to get to this stage, it's not a good look.
Not a good look at all.
Gravenberch, great player, but the guy's a project.
Yeah, he hasn't played for a year.
He's Bayern Munich. You know, and what I love too, by the way, Nagelsmann gets crucified. Oh, yeah, he doesn't play tight, but Matthijs Tell, Gravenberch, blah, 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 right? Oh, how big is Gravenberch in Tuchel's plans? So big that he's like, you know, do you see what I'm saying? It's the character assassination of Nagelsmann, which just continues. But I just don't know that Liverpool right now are the right place for Gravenberch to grow.
No, I agree.
Jude Bellingham has been a hit at Real Madrid, but Bild in Germany report that a number of his teammates are glad he's gone because he wanted to be the center of attention. Does this make sense to you, Jules?
I mean, I know a couple of people who are really close to Jude Bellingham. That's not the portrait that I get from them or that I feel from them either.
Wait, really? People who work for Jude Bellingham don't think that he wants to be
No. But, you know, in the sense that, I think they're honest with me and I don't think he's that kind of guy. But maybe he is, or maybe some people at Dortmund felt like that. I don't think Jude Bellingham wants to be the center of attention everywhere. Is he a big character? Yeah. Is he strong-minded? Of course he is. Is he ambitious? Of course he is. He has everything to become one of the best players in the world, if not the best player in the world. Is that being the center of attention? I don't think so.
Well, first of all, I just hate these cheapo stories after somebody leaves. When you often see it, especially in England and in Italy a lot, with managers, right? Lukaku's been a subject character assassination from the Italian media.
Yeah.
Maybe he deserves it. I don't get it. What are you saying to me? Bellingham is the best, most important player, was the best, most important player at Dortmund since Haaland left, right?
Yeah.
I mean, he was the hub of the wheel. He plays in central midfield. Yeah. He's better than the other. Sorry, he wants to be the center. He takes on responsibility. What exactly are you talking about? What's the problem here?
I know. Juventus are closing in on Sassuolo's Domenico Berardi. I mean, they've been linked with him every year for the last 10 years or something, no? Is he the answer? Gabby, to Max Allegri's problems or questions?
I think this is, again, Allegri wanting another strike. I think he really, I don't know if Vlahovic smells or something. Like, Berardi, of course, more of a wide player. Sure. Would he make Juve better? Yeah. But, you know, the funny thing, Berardi's been young for so long that, you know,
he's 30 now.
I don't think this is the profile that Juve need. I don't think this is the profile that Juve said they were going to have. They're talking about, you know, oh, we'll sell Ealing Jr. or whatever to fund the Berardi transfer. If you go with kids, you go with kids. And I'm sorry, if Max Allegri doesn't seem to understand that, then, you know, he can go, he can resign. Hey, how about that?
Oh, that would be lovely.
It can happen.
Yeah.
Lazio had one of Serie A's best goalkeepers last year in Ivan Provedel, 21 clean sheets, something like that. Yeah. So, Jules, why didn't I link to your boy, Hugo Lloris?
I've got no idea, Gabby. I mean, I would love Hugo to go there if that's what he wants and what Lazio wants. But as a backup?
He wants to live in Rome, maybe.
Yeah, which is, I couldn't really understand.
He's going to retire very soon. He can move to Rome if he wants to.
I would go. I'm sure Marine, the wife, and the kids, the three kids, and the dogs would love it. For sure. I'd be very happy to visit. But I just don't understand the dynamic. So the dynamic, what, Lloris is coming as a backup, or what, is it the number one, and Provedel is...
The idea, I mean, Provedel started last year as the number two,
yeah.
And people started, he was so much better than this Maximiano fellow. So, you know, he conquered the number one spot. Lazio had a great season last year. To go and bring in a World Cup winner who's going to be on substantial
big money,
even though
I think so.
He's on a free transfer, and say, okay, Ivan, your reward is, here's the guy
go back
won
to the
World
bench.
Cup. And really you'll compete strange. For the job. Seems really, really weird. It also, frankly, seems weird to me that Hugo Lloris is out there on a free transfer, still out there.
Well, not really. He's still in the contract with Spurs, technically. They will let him go, but he still had a year left. And, you know, he's technically a free agent. But you mean that nobody has signed
him
yet?
Well, he hasn't made up his mind what he wants to do. I mean, I wonder, too, you know, my love for Vicario.
Yeah.
I wonder if Spurs were maybe still convinced, were thinking of, hey, how about, you know, why they brought in somebody like Vicario, who is a promised young keeper, but not necessarily.
Yeah, so what, they think he's going to come back? Maybe, I don't know.
Maybe, I don't know.
He really wanted the Inter number one spot. And obviously missed out. I don't know why they went for someone, not him, what happened there. So
didn't know the guy was such a Serie A fan.
I know, man, amazing. As in Spain are reporting that Ansu Fati is unhappy at Barcelona and wants to leave the club. Do you get where he's coming from, Gab, or is it just a love? Remind me, who is it?
Yeah, exactly. It's, you know, when you're part of the Justy Food Galaxy, these stories get planted. Look, I don't, we can always go and speculate what's behind it. Personally, I am surprised he doesn't get more playing time.
We've said that last season as well.
But even in this game against Getafe, right? Lewandowski was having a really bad, bad time. He's getting kicked left, right, and center. Why doesn't Ansu come on for him when you play Ansu at center forward, for example?
Like,
what position does he, where do you see him?
Yeah.
I think there's a lot of unanswered questions there when it comes to Ansu. We'll see now where Rafinha is going to be suspended. Yeah. You know, do we get to see him, or is it more Abde and whatever?
I know.
You know, like, I get where it's coming from. I don't think it's the right way to agitate, and I don't think it makes sense for Barcelona to move him on now, because the upside with Ansu Fati remains enormous. This could be a 200 million player in a few years. He's still very, very young. And even this whole idea, oh, no, we have Lamine Yamal now, we don't need Ansu Fati.
Yeah.
Chill on that. Jules, Dimitri Payet. The legendary Dimitri Payet has a new home, and it's in Brazil.
Exactly. The first,
how about that?
First French player ever, Gabby, to play in the Brasileiro when he will make his debut with Vasco You saw the reception that you got yesterday when you arrived in Brazil. 5,000 fans at the airport. They had like their faces painted in the French colors, and it was incredible. Even I think Payet, who they call Payet, by the way, which is okay. It's okay with me. I don't think he expected this. Maybe the club didn't really tell him, listen, this is going to be crazy. But it was amazing. And I guess if you're signing a player like Payet, that probably a lot of Vasco fans would not have been playing, would have been watching, right? Or not much. Then you go on YouTube. If there's one player that has incredible highlight reels on YouTube, it's him, right? From the goal against Park last season. Everything, because he's really good technically. That's what he does. And I think he's going to be amazing in Brazil. I think they, in a way, to finish his career, this is going to be beautiful. And I hope he has like a similar journey than Gignac has in Mexico. And that is it's a full success, but I really wish him all the best. I mean, he's not one of my favorite players. I know him a little bit, but I really wish him the best because I think this could be an amazing experience.
So I love the story of the European players going to Brazil and saying, like, you know, it's a little bit like I love the De Rossi story going to Boca. Clarence Seedorf did it.
Yeah.
Probably a bigger name than Payet.
Yeah.
Up and down a little bit. Didn't quite fully work out the way people thought. Pekovic is still, I think, the guy who had the most success over there and for a long time and loved it so much. I think he's still there.
Yeah. Juanfran, that we had forgotten about. Juanfran, there are.
Remember other people we've forgotten? Please.
Yes.
Hit us up on social media.
For sure. Mark Bullingham, who is the English FA
Chief Executive.
CEO, exactly. Was quite a lot to say about Sarina Wiegmann in case Gareth Southgate was leaving the England men's side, wasn't he?
Yeah, basically he said, of course, if she wants the England men's job, she would have to be seriously considered. This is a story that comes from Mark Ogden. I don't know the context in which he said it. I think to me, and look, I'm not saying a woman can't manage the England men's team ever. No, it can happen. No. It should happen. I think it will happen the next few years.
So,
you know, Emma Hayes' name keeps getting brought up for a reason, right? It's already happened in other countries. However, this seems to me like totally playing to the crowd. Like all those politicians who took pictures of themselves in pubs saying, go Lionesses, to show that like, oh, there's big
women.
You're simply saying this because she's in the final of the World Cup and she won the Euros. And, you know, she's Dutch, by the way, right?
Yeah.
And there's no thought behind it. There's no thought about how have England done to get, how have England played in this tournament? It's out of sync with the fact that this is not a good England performance in this tournament at all.
That's true.
At all. So you're showing also that maybe you either didn't watch the games or you don't care. It's just not a good look. If you want to consider a women's coach, then when Gareth Southgate leaves, say, like, we open this to anybody. We'll open this to everybody.
Yeah.
And give them a real chance to go and interview for the job. But just because Sarina Wiegmann's in the news to come out and say something like this.
I know. Just after she qualified the team for the final of the World Cup, it's just like, oh.
Yeah. Jules, I expected Leeds to pop straight back up to the Premier League, given how many great players they have. But with those relegation clauses in play, it seems like they're struggling to hang on to guys like Tyler Adams and Luis Sinisterra.
Yeah.
Or even my man Willy Nyanto, who doesn't have a relegation clause, but has to leave. Why do you all want to go?
So desperate to go. I mean, relegation clauses are quite normal. Let's put it that a lot of clubs, a lot of players, a lot of agents ask for them. When you sign for a club, that potentially could go down. So you don't do it with Man City or Arsenal, those clubs. And very often clubs agree to it. Then it puts you in trouble when you actually go down. And then those players like Tyler Adams can see their clause of £20 million, who I think for Tyler Adams is a really good amount of money. It's a bit of a bargain. Then it gets triggered very, very easily. So I can understand the frustration from a Leeds fan point of view, because your best players are going to leave because of those clauses. But you also have to understand that some players might not have come had those clauses not been agreed by Leeds to be put in place, if that makes sense.
Yeah, and I think it's important to get the clause at the right amount, right?
Yeah.
And also, a lot of these players, again, I don't know the case with this, but it's pretty standard. You sign one contract in the Premier League, and if you go down to the Championship, you automatically take a reduction in wages. In most cases, that's the case, right?
Yeah, yeah.
So when we also don't know if these guys have those reductions in their contracts. It's only part of the story that's out there.
Yeah. Marko Arnautović is back at Inter after 14 years. Gab, I assume this will go better than the last time he went, although he's still 34 years old.
Like last time, like when he arrived and he says, like, look, I'm the new Ibrahimovic. I'm like, what, because you're tall and because you can juggle the ball and your name ends in ick? He was icky when he played. He was terrible. I think he scored double figures for Bologna in the last couple of years.
Oh, he's good.
Old striker with roots on the other side of the Danube. Hey, that worked. It worked for Edin Dzeko, right?
So it did, exactly.
I mean, I'd be more concerned if I were Inter with the fact that Thuram has scored zero goals in preseason friendlies.
He hasn't looked good, has he?
New.
Oh, yeah.
Jose Mourinho finally got himself some midfielders and he's shopping in the Paris Saint-Germain bargain bucket. Okay, I got to say, I'm going to come out and say this. This is just so transparent. But what do you make of Leandro Paredes and Renato Sanchez, Jules?
Well, I mean...
I honestly, at some point, somebody's got to come out and say this, yeah?
Yeah. Remind me, who's Jose Mourinho's agent again? Sanchez.
Yeah.
Who's in charge in Paris?
And Uncle Luis Campos. Yeah, the whole thing.
Jorge Mendes, at his best. I mean, come on. If you let him do things like that, he will do them, you know.
Take charge of this club. Control your own club.
I know.
This is ridiculous.
Thiago Pinto is, I would think, quite close to Jorge Mendes as well, right?
Well, I was told that he wasn't when he was appointed, right?
Yeah, but...
And he said, you're just saying that because he's Portuguese. I don't know. But Thiago Pinto's like, he's like 19 years old. Like, I don't understand how they're running this.
In fairness, the fee for Paredes is nothing, pretty much nothing. I think it's 6 million, up to 6 million, something like that.
Based win. And last season at Juventus, he contributed how much?
No, I know.
Okay, just checking.
It's still not much, even for Roma. Renato Sanchez is a loan with... a buyout clause. So the loan is 1 million, then the buy is 15. So if he does well and he's a young player, then Renato can potentially be a good signing for Roma. That's
apart from that one season at Lille, has Renato Sanchez done anything?
Well, at Benfica, and the Benfica years leading to the Euros 2016, where he was obviously outstanding.
Well, when he was 12 years old.
Yeah, I know, but still.
No, I'm not talking about that.
I know, but.
I'm talking like since he actually moved.
No, yeah, there's that one season at Lille. That's it.
You know what would downright offend me, even though because he's a gentleman, he didn't make the thing. Daniele De Rossi, Leandro Paredes took Daniele De Rossi's shirt.
I know.
And Daniele De Rossi's good luck, Leandro.
Funny you said that. I thought Daniele De Rossi's number had been, as you say,
retired.
Yeah.
We should be retired.
I know.
It's ridiculous.
So when I saw the story, I was like, hang on. One, he's not retired. Two, you're going to give it to Paredes.
To this doofus. Seriously.
I wouldn't go that far. But come on. This number is sacred. You can't just give that shirt to anybody. Newcastle will host some Saudi Arabia national team games at St. James's Park. Gab, are you surprised?
No, not at all. It makes sense. Commercially, you can capitalize on the massive numbers of people with Saudi roots in the Northeast who no doubt are...
going to fill the stadium with passion.
Listen, they have a stadium. They can make money by renting it out for concerts or games.
Yeah.
I got no issue for it. This artifice about PIF, separate legal entity, would be good if you cleared it up at some point. Not you, Newcastle, you Premier League.
Yeah.
They said they can come out and say, oh, look, we invited every federation. We asked the French Federation, hey, do you guys want to come? No?
Nope.
Okay. And the only ones who replied to their email, funny enough, are the Saudi ones. Okay. Nicolò Zaniolo is undergoing a medical at Aston Villa. Jules, right place to get his career back on track.
I want to see him in the Premier. I want to see him anywhere. He did well in Turkey, wellish. I just think he's an incredible talent. Whether he fulfilled all the potential, I don't know yet. And some would say not really or hasn't done it yet. But I think if, considering the talent that he has, if he even fulfill it half of Villa, I think already that's going to be amazing. And I want to see those exciting players in the Premier League. So I'm happy that he's coming over.
He's coming over because it's the Buendia injury,
you would think.
Although it's a very different profile from Buendia.
Completely.
So, and I'm just wondering though, between Zaniolo, Bailey, and Diaby, you've got like a track team behind the center forward
and
there.
And Watkins.
What?
So Watkins and Ollie Watkins.
Yeah.
I was like, wow, okay.
I mean, would those be the 4x400? leaders by in the Premier League by a mile.
Oh my God.
By a mile. Even if you had four ever. Kyle Walkers, those guys will get you.
No chance. Yeah. Amazing. Just for that, I'm excited to see him. His official guy, Matteo Alemán, is out of Barca, and Deco is the new sporting director. Something tells me that you're not too happy.
And we knew it was coming.
Yeah.
So just another opportunity to say, dude, you're either an agent or you work for a club. And I don't care that Deco wound up all his companies and whatever.
Yeah, he said that he's not involved anymore with that.
What does that mean? Like, you know, let's have very clear separations. I mean, the good thing is Barcelona are under so much scrutiny right now about how every penny is spent.
Yeah.
That I think Deco's going to be on a very, very short
good
leash.
Behavior. Yeah,
and
he's
been an agent for a good decade now at this point. If he uses that to help Barcelona when they need to sell players, sell them at the right price, do the right deals. It's not even about spotting talent, because when you're Barcelona, you're going to sign top players,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, so anyway.
You don't really require much spotting. It's about getting the deals done at the right price. And he has experience. So, I don't know. I'm a little more positive on Deco than I was before.
Good.
Inter Miami rode into Philadelphia in the League's Cup, or more correctly, I think, Subaru Park in Chester, Pennsylvania, and won 4-1. Just the one goal for Lionel Messi's scoring average is declining, Jules. That must be a real concern.
Well, I mean, the goal is good, although I question a little bit the goalkeeper because he's from a long way.
But are you kidding? The goalkeeper's Andre Blake. Only Jesus saves more.
Yeah, but another great goal, another great performance. I mean, I don't know, like, it's amazing to see him like that. And I mean, I thought it was good for him to start with the League Cup. I don't know what difference this is going to be or not.
As opposed to all the pressure. Yeah. Sorry, I couldn't resist. Sorry.
No, but still, you know what I mean?
Yeah, I gotcha.
But outstanding. That's all. The numbers are crazy. Santi Cazorla is back at Oviedo at 38 years of age. Gabi be playing for the league minimum salary, and the chunk of his commercial income will go to fund the youth team. I bet you love this story.
I do love it. I mean, like, it's a little, you know, he was in Al Sadd for three years getting paid.
But, yeah, he made enough money there.
I don't begrudge him that, given what he's been through. I mean, you know the situation. Robbins, he was at Arsenal for a long time. Mm. He has those tremendous injury concerns. Everybody I know who's dealt with him says he's a genuinely good guy.
Amazing
to
guy.
Come back, to give back. I have no idea what he has left in the tank, but it doesn't matter.
No.
It's just nice to see footballers doing what they love and not kind of saying, oh, but money.
Yeah, I really agree.
Jules, that brings us to an end.
Already?
It's great to have you back.
Oh, man.
We're going to be back on Thursday. No, Monday. Today's Thursday. We're going to be back on Monday. After the start of the Serie A season. I'm
and Bundesliga
after that.
As well.
And proper Bundesliga as well. Until then, love the game. Love you. Love yourself.